Hello, everyone, and welcome to minute 62 of season 5 of Movie Our Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1990 Bruce Willis action flick Die Hard 2, Die Harder, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again is Nick Rehak of Lyrical Innuendo and a whole bunch of other things. Welcome back to the show, Nick.
Thank you for having me back. I appreciate it.
Well, yeah, you did a nice job yesterday, so I figured I'll let you. I'll give you another shot.
That's very kind of you. Thank you.
What? That's what friends are for, isn't it?
Oh, that's true.
So, minute 62 begins with Holly discussing men's body odors and ends with Thornburg professing his love for Victor. So, yesterday we ended things with Thornburg somehow standing in front of Holly and, the old woman next to her. And Holly started saying to him, do you think you might consider? And the minute got stopped. And so today we can actually hear what happens. She goes, do you think you might consider switching aftershaves? So she's a bit snippy with what she's saying here, but I think it's well deserved because he really shouldn't be where he is. You
No.
know, the he's definitely overstepping personal boundaries here. And you think that with the antagonistic way that he and Holly have been, at each other throughout this plane ride so far, or throughout the parts of the plane ride that they've shown us, don't you think it would have made more sense for him to go to someone else's window?
Yeah, absolutely. And maybe he can, stroke his ego, introduce himself, and be like, hi, this is who I am. This is what I do. Oh, just let me take a peek real quick. And not only that, I mean, the stewardesses and the flight attendants, they don't care for him either. So you think they would have stepped in and been like, oh, you need to get to your seat. Or like even an air marshal step in and like, sir, I need you to return to your seat. Something like that.
I agree with you, but nobody does. It's Richard Thornburg. You can't do anything about him, I guess.
It's true.
I don't know. And I think he takes her seriously when she says that you might consider switching out the shoes, because then he just looks at her and goes, anything else? And then she turns to him and goes, stronger mouthwash might be nice also. So, there's some nice jabs at him, meaning that you'd think that someone like Thornburg would actually, take more control of his hygiene.
Oh, absolutely so. You think that, or you think he'd already have some kind of, I don't want to say makeup, but like some kind of powder to take off the shine or something like that. And I'm kind of surprised that he doesn't like quip back at her or kind of jab at her. And I wonder if maybe there's like a little bit of an internal realization of like, okay, I deserve that. Even though earlier in the film, he talks about how he was humiliated by her.
That's right. He's humiliated by her and doesn't want to be anywhere near her, but he's willing to go look out the window in front of her. So
Exactly.
I don't know. Something doesn't make sense there, with
Not at all.
the way that he does that. But I mean, I guess there's also the fact that he's been on a plane for 5 hours plus. So maybe that's part of it.
That's true.
Maybe he's sweating because of that, and therefore, she smells a little bit of the BO instead of his aftershave or mouthwash. I don't know.
That's possible, especially if they've been up there for a while.
And he was complaining that he couldn't get the first class meal, so I guess he was just eating the economy meal and didn't brush his teeth afterwards, and that's why she wants him to use stronger mouthwash, maybe.
Yeah, just snacking down a whole lot of peanuts and free Diet Cokes.
That's right. Because back then you could,
Yeah.
unlike today. Well,
No, you can't even smoke on planes anymore. What's that about?
I don't know if you were able to smoke. I don't think you were able to smoke in 1990 either,
Nah, I
but
was very too young to smoke.
yeah. Have you ever been on a plane that you remember that people were smoking?
No, never. The first time I was on a plane was 1990, 98 or 99, somewhere in there. First time on a plane, and I didn't see anybody smoking.
No, that then they couldn't. That was the front. So in the 80s, I do remember. In the 70s and 80s, when I was on a plane as a kid, I do remember people smoking. You know, and the whole idea of a smoking section just always makes me laugh because, you know, the smoke from behind has nowhere to go but forward. So it doesn't matter. It doesn't matter.
Never made...
doesn't matter where you're sitting. You're going to smell the smoke.
Yeah, absolutely. It never made sense to me. Now, I can remember smoking sections in restaurants, but they were literally cordoned off. They had like a wall in it, or they had their own space and everything. But I mean, on a plane, it never made sense to me.
Yeah.
Not like you can open a window and let the smoke out.
Right. That's true. So what do you know about aftershave? I mean, I know you have a beard.
That's the thing. So I've been with my wife 9 years now, married for 3, together for 6, and she has never seen me without a beard. The last time I shaved my face completely was November 2010.
Wow.
So, yeah, I have zero history with aftershave.
Okay. All right. That makes sense. So aftershave is a product that is applied to skin after shaving. It's usually some sort of alcohol-based liquid, which you can splash on, or it's sometimes a lotion, gel, and sometimes even like a paste type of thing. It usually contains some sort of antiseptic agent that it will try to prevent infections of cuts. And, you know, it's supposed to act as an astringent in order to reduce skin irritation and stuff like that. Sometimes there's menthol in it in order to help numb irritated skin. You know, like I personally don't like putting on aftershave or cologne, but sometimes I will put it on and you can definitely feel the difference. You know, you feel that it is doing something. You know, what exactly it's doing from the alcohol, I don't know. But
I would have thought that if there's alcohol and even menthol, wouldn't it dry out the skin? Wouldn't you want something a little more like lotion or moisture to kind of like keep the skin fresh? I don't know.
Yeah, no, I understand what you're saying, but I think the idea is more to soothe the skin at the same time and also just still give some sort of nice fragrant smell.
Makes sense.
Yeah.
Makes sense.
All right, what about mouthwash? What do you know about mouthwash?
Mouthwash.
Or are you going to tell me? Or are you going to tell me you haven't, since you haven't shaved since 2010, you don't know about any mouthwash?
I haven't brushed since 2010 either. I use mouthwash, but I use it before I go to bed. I don't use it before I go out to the day and do whatever I got to do, which I don't. I mean, I guess in my mind, like overnight, I'm killing germs, like in addition to the brushing. But I don't mouthwash before I leave the house. It's weird.
Okay. No, I do the same thing. So, yeah. So it's a mouthwash is also known as either mouth rinse, oral rinse, or mouth bath. And it's a liquid that is usually held in the mouth or swirled around in the mouth. And sometimes it's gargled. You know, you might tilt your head backwards and let it bubble in the back of your throat. And it usually has some sort of antiseptic solution that tries to get rid of the microbial, basically bad smell in your, you know, in your mouth.
Fair enough.
Yeah. Sometimes people use it for saliva substitutes to neutralize acid and keep the mouth moist.
Huh.
Yeah.
Okay. Didn't see that one coming, but okay, I could see it.
Yeah. And basically the reason people gargle is to keep it, you know, to get it to go as far back in the mouth as possible. Mm-hmm. And the idea is to try to get to those far-reaching parts of the throat, I guess you can say.
Okay.
Yeah. Now, what do you know about drinking? Can you drink mouthwash? What do you think?
I'm going to say no. I think just because – I mean, I'm sure you can, but not copious amounts of it. I mean, yeah, there's some – I think there's like a teensy bit of alcohol or something in there, and that could like kind of, I'm not saying get you buzzed or whatever, but it's not going to be enough to really kind of get you in that mindset. I just think it's too strong and intense to really like drink it.
Right. So, I mean, you can drink a little bit of it, but if you drink too much of it is because it has a high alcohol content and other harmful substances, it can cause serious harm or even death. And it is a common cause of death among
Yikes.
it's a common cause of death of among homeless people who during the winter months will drink mouthwash because it makes them feel warmer.
I was not expecting that. Okay.
Yeah, so
Okay.
you shouldn't drink mouthwash. You should stay as far
I won't
away.
ever do it, I promise.
That's right. And then the scene changes, and we're back in the lair of the bad guys. We see the computers computing and making all the sound. I mean, we're not going to talk again about where do they get all this equipment because we have no idea where they were able to get this equipment on sale, and how they could all quickly learn how to use it. Don't know. Not really sure. But
Yeah, just luck, a whole lot of luck.
that's right. And I first of all love the way they do this scene because you have two things going on at the same time. You have Garber talking to Stewart, but you also can hear the radio in the background or the TV, basically. So it like intercuts between them. So first you hear it from the TV, and here's Sam Coleman reporting live from the site. And then Garber turns to Stewart and says, "Well, Colonel, they've done everything we've anticipated." We go back to the TV. And we hear Sam Coleman say, "But still, there has been no official word from authorities. Meanwhile, despite the fact that only one runway has been closed due to the tragedy, several dozen airlines are visible from where I stand, endlessly circling the field. Other reports say that there was trouble in the tower before the crash, and that may have contributed to it. One thing is certain, with weather conditions worsening, the problem here and in the sky above us will continue to grow. I'm Samantha Coleman at Dulles International Airport." So she actually says some interesting things, but as she's talking, we see her on the screen, but we also can see that Stewart, he had taken that little piece of plastic that had the Windsor 114 information on it, and the info slide. And as she's talking, he like crumbles it up in his hand and then like throws it away to basically say, "Okay, this plane is gone. We don't have to worry about that anymore." But it's interesting the report that she's giving here because it makes no sense. She says there's no official word. So why does she know that only one runway has been closed? I mean, wouldn't they notice that there are no lights on around the runways, and that therefore there are no planes landing anywhere, not just that one that one runway?
See, the scene always felt out of place to me because we know this information. The characters all know this information. You know what I mean? Everybody, except for those in the planes, obviously, but everybody knows what's going on. So why does the audience have to go through this again? And to your point of her, like, how did she get that information? I can see if there's a moment where we can kind of see her in the background with like a pad of paper and a pencil, like jotting some stuff down and then leaving, going, okay, she's got her information. And then we find out that she's, going on the air with this information. But we don't get that. She's just on the air and talking about it. And again, I don't know who it's for. Because again, everybody that's involved in the situation knows what's going on, and so does the audience. So it feels like a moot point.
Well, I think maybe they're trying to tell Stewart what's going on. Trying to show that, I mean, they're trying to show the chaos also. I mean, even in the report, she's basically saying we know nothing. I love the fact though that she says that there that you could she can see several dozen planes in the sky. Okay, now how many planes, and I don't have an answer to this, but we'll get an answer to it later in the week. But how many planes do you think are in Dulles' pattern at this point? I mean, whatever it is, it's minus one, that we know. But how
Yeah.
many planes are in a
I
general
mean,
pattern? I mean, for her to say several dozen airlines, several dozen means at least 36 airlines.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'm willing to believe that there is that amount, if not more, because there is a scene in the film, and I can't remember if it's before this point or after this point, where they say, all right, go ahead and change the marquees. And all of a sudden, all of these flights start going delayed. And there's a lot of flights on there. Like, it's not just a handful of them. It's like screens worth. So yes. I can absolutely
that was
get why
2 weeks
says
ago.
There's a lot.
I think that was we talked about that 2 weeks ago. Yeah, but three dozen, you know, having at least three dozen, I don't know. Sounds a little strange. But we will get an answer to that later this week. I think on Friday.
Okay, all right.
You know, once again, keep listening every day and you'll be able to hear the answer on Friday when we get there. No, but also the fact that she says that there was trouble in the tower. You know, the reports, she was in the tower, so she knows there was trouble. You know, she's part of the trouble that was in the tower.
That's true.
You know, because they got angry at her that she wasn't supposed to be there. You know.
Which how she even got up there.
That's right.
Someone's dropping the ball.
That's right. So I don't know. I mean, the way that's delivered is just a little. And also, how is she so close to the crash area? You know?
Yeah, how is she? Like, shouldn't it be roped off and everything? You think they would learn from the first time with McClane going on about, you know, this needs to be roped off and, you know, crime scene and everything. And here she is just standing, like, literally right next to it. She can get bumped or hit at any moment by something.
That's like, right. She's standing next to, like, the emergency, you know, the emergency vehicles. You see a helicopter behind her. You see the burning airplane behind her. She's pretty damn close.
She's very unsafe, very impractical, and very unsafe.
That's true. And again, if she's that close, wouldn't she notice that there are no other runways with lights? Back to my earlier thing.
That's also
true. You know, yeah. She somehow got all the way out there. Okay, she got permission to go there. I don't know who she's going to get permission from, but she got permission. All right, so let's say she got permission and that she's able to be there, but. She had to walk all the way out there or drive out there in the news van, which probably cannot drive on the runways, especially since there's only one runway closed. So therefore, you know, having civilian cars or trucks driving around there is pretty dangerous too.
Yeah, especially, I mean, yeah, she's lit up by, you know, the light and the camera and everything, but still, that's not such a bright light where you'd be able to avoid her until like a last minute kind of thing.
That's
you
right.
know?
I don't know. Very strange. Very strange. But again, the report is interesting because it gives us a little bit of information as to what she knows or what she thinks she knows. Because again, it's not that, you know, some of the things she's saying here is pure speculation.
Which, I mean, I get how it's speculation, but she's also kind of there. So she knows firsthand that, you know, this is what's going on. 1 + 1 is going to equal 2, you know?
Right. That's true. No, because she's also talking about the weather, you know, the weather get worsening, so therefore it's going to be problems, you know, so I don't know. But also the fact that she can see the planes at night, you know, circling around, you know, is she and her cameraman sitting there saying, okay, let's count how many planes are up there. And they say, wow, there's more than 36 up there. What do you know? And how would they know?
Because I mean,
how would they know if they weren't, you know, recounting the same airplane that's going in circles?
I was just about to say that because there's only so many different colored lights up there flashing around. Like, are you really going to know?
It's like counting sheep. You know, they all look the same. So you hope it's the same one as opposed to just like them going in a circular pattern.
And with them counting, how do they not fall asleep? I sometimes, if I can't sleep, I just start counting and then eventually I'm just gone. So if I'm looking up at the sky, dark out, and I'm just counting 1, 2, 3. Sooner or later, I'm just snoring, and that's the ball game.
Then Nick would be giving a great report.
Just half asleep on camera, just yawning. Oh, it's Nick with Action News.
There's at least five. There's at least five planes up there. I couldn't count higher than that.
Yeah. I only got so many fingers on one hand. I don't know what to tell you.
That's
guys. Oh, man.
Yeah. And then the scene changes and we see a curtain on an airplane getting drawn backwards. And then we see Thornburg walking back on the airplane. You can see that he's apparently close to the tail end of the airplane, which I find interesting that usually the curtain is what, you know, separates first class from the rest of the airplane. But apparently, you know, on this plane, it's every single area is cut off, you know, by the curtains. And and the truth is, these seats, even if this is economy, they look pretty comfortable also.
Yeah, super comfortable. Again, what airline is this? I'm sure it's make-believe for the film, but what airline is this where I can have, like, just relaxing lighting, plenty of leg room, nice people, assumedly, except for, you know, Dick walking around? Like, just what a dream. Yeah.
And think about it. There also aren't that many rows here. I mean, he walks back six rows to meet this other guy, and there's another three rows behind him. So you have a total of 10 rows in this entire area of the cabin, which isn't very much.
No, it would be, if it's any other flight, there'd be like 20.
Probably. that's what I would guess too. So I don't know. But he then stoops down next to someone else. And he starts to talk, he wakes him up, actually, or disturbs him. He goes, "Victor, Victor, Victor." Now, Victor is played by an actor named Rob Steinberg, who has 70 IMDb credits, but none of them really stand out. They're mostly small parts, if not entirely. This was the second movie that he was in. He was in a few TV shows before this also, but it was only the second movie that he was in. But his part is pretty small here. He's in this scene, and we're going to get him in a few weeks again. I think a week from now or 2 weeks. So, yeah.
It's small but important at the same time. Yes,
definitely is. And we will definitely have a lot to say about him tomorrow. But so their conversation after he's more or less disturbed by Thornburg. So he goes, "Yeah, what's up?" And he goes, "Did you pack the radio mics from the shoot? Or did you put them in your carry-on?" He goes, "Are you crazy? I wouldn't let those guys check them in." He goes, "I love you." And, you know, it's just very strange. This is like a very strange type of conversation for them to be having. You know, but it also goes to show the class difference between Thornburg, you know, and his sound guy. Because, you know, his sound guy is sitting all the way in the back of the plane. And Thornburg is supposed to be in first class.
And if he really loves him, wouldn't he have him up first class with him?
Well, he doesn't pay for it. You know, it's the...
That's true. That's true.
You know, I would think that it's being used from it's being paid for by the network. So the network's not going to say, "Oh, well, we're going to let the sound guy also there." You know, it's the idea of catering to the talent.
yeah. Okay. I can see that.
You know, so
I guess I'm just a little more optimistic for the background guys. Right.
Yeah, it's true. I mean, I'm not much of a sound guy, but, you know, when you say radio mics, you think he's referring to just microphones that are connected to the radio? Or is it something else? Because, you know, we're only going to get into tomorrow what they actually need to do here, but there's no reason for a radio mic, a microphone.
Unless you're trying to tap into a police or fire or emergency service type signal. So when you hear about something that's happening, a fire or, you know, gunshots, wherever, you can immediately get to that site where it is, be the first on the scene in order to report about
it. But why do you need a radio mic for that? Is a radio mic a microphone?
Unless it's a combination where you can get radio signal and record to it. I'm not sure now that you talk about it. I'm not sure. I guess I just kind of accepted it with a lot of the other inconsistencies and kept going.
Yeah, okay. All right, that's fine. It makes sense. No, I was just curious to know what it means. It could just be, you know, something they throw out there and it's not real.
Yeah. Or maybe he doesn't know what he's talking about and the guy knows what he means through, you know, slang or whatever.
That's true.
But he's like, "Oh, it really gets a this," but he calls it radio mic, so like I get it.
That's interesting. All right, yeah.
Not letting
Victor's
feel,
like,
you know, I don't want to say
Victor's
dumb,
like,
but
yeah, he's calling my receiver a mic, but all right, he's an idiot, so that's fine. You know.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, mm-hmm. That actually makes sense. That actually makes a lot of sense. So you have anything else you want to say about this minute before we get into the script?
Only other comment I had is just how breathy he says, "I love
that's
you.
Right.
Just, I love you."
That's right.
It was so much. I'm like, okay, pal, ease up some.
Yes. It was Well, no one else, I guess, will love Thornburg as much, so why not? So in the script, the Samantha Coleman's report and the, you know, us being back in the Stewart's lair happens, you know, 2 pages before this, before this scene, before this minute takes place even. You know, it was something that was just thrown in. So it says, you know, in the silence since the crash, no sounds here except the faint monitoring of the tower and the aircraft chatter and the muted audio of a TV. Garber breaks the silence. Sir, they've done everything we've anticipated so far. Stewart smiles tightly at the unvoiced question. Don't worry, Captain. If this goes into extra innings, we'll just call in our men in the other team's locker room. And almost an afterthought, he wipes the flight number from the clear glass board. Camera pushes to the television. On the screen, Sam Coleman is on the camera, live, supered over her face. She's outside on the airfield, her news helicopter beside her. In the distance behind barricades, we see the crash site. Hundreds of people in the terminal heard and saw the crash, but still there's been no official word from authorities. Meanwhile, despite the fact that only one runway has been closed due to the tragedy, several dozen airliners are visible from where I stand, endlessly circling the field. Rumors around that somehow the accident has interfered with normal landing procedures here. Other reports say that there were difficulties in the tower before the crash, and that they may have even contributed to it. One thing is certain, with weather conditions worsening, the problem here in the sky above us will continue to grow. Samantha Coleman at Dulles International Airport. So, again, I like it better the way they cut it in the movie. I think that works much better. And then...
Yeah, I agree.
Then later on, we have, you know, the conversation between Holly and Thornburg. And she says, you know, if you're going to keep getting this close, do you think you could change aftershaves? And then it says Thornburg dryly, anything else? Stronger mouthwash would be nice too. He glares at her and then moves down the aisle. With him, he goes to the coach section, moves to the row with his news crew. He shakes a sleeping assistant awake. Victor. Yeah, what? Did you pack the radio mics from the chute or put them in your carry-on? Are you crazy? I wouldn't let those check them. I love you. So, again, it flows much better in the movie. There's not much of a difference here, but it mm-hmm. still flows much better. So every Tuesday we have a segment called Disaster Tuesday, where what I've decided to do is every week I talk about a different plane crash disaster that has happened over the course of the years. And I usually try and find something that is somehow connected to my guests, whether it's geographically or some other reason of how it can be some connected to the person. So as everyone who knows, Nick is a huge music fan. So I decided to talk about a plane crash that involves musicians, which unfortunately there are a lot of them. But I decided to go with one that happened in 1977. Do you have any clue what you think I might be talking about, Nick?
The only one I could guess is Lynyrd Skynyrd.
And you would be correct.
Yes. I mean, yes, I'm excited, but you know what I mean. Like, no. I'm glad that I got it correct.
Yeah, exactly. All right. Do you know anything? What do you know about the crash? Do you know anything about it?
I grew up on Lynyrd Skynyrd. My father is a huge Skinner fan, so I've listened to their music inside and out. I do know that it was after a gig, and there was a discussion/argument about who was riding on the bus, who was riding on the plane. I know the last couple words exchanged were, I hope your plane crashes, I hope your bus crashes, just usual, like you're just mad at somebody. And the plane crashed. And then a week later, or a couple days later, there was an album that came out called Street Survivors, and it's all the members standing in front of like a flaming, I can't remember if it's a car or what, but just standing in front of flames, and it got pulled and it switched out with some different artwork, but it was just really, really creepy how like that's what came after it.
Okay. Well, first of all, I want to correct you a little bit. The Street Survivors came out 3 days before the plane crashed.
Okay.
Didn't come out after, it came out before. They were performing in Greenville, South Carolina, and they got on a plane to Baton Rouge. It was a private plane that they chartered, and Do you know what happened with the plane? Like, why did you know why it crashed?
I feel like it's the same way for like Otis Redding or Stevie Ray Vaughan. I would say weather, and they just got mixed up and thought they were one place, they were something else, and then it just went awry.
Well, they ran out of fuel. They didn't have enough gas.
Okay. I was not expecting that one, but okay.
Yeah. And the pilots tried making a crash landing in an open field. And what happened was there were actually 20 people who survived, but there was a bunch of people that were killed in the crash. So the lead vocalist Ronnie Van Zant, mm-hmm. Guitarist Steve Gaines, backup vocalist Cassie Gaines, who was Steve's older sister, the assistant road manager Dean Kilpatrick, the captain and first officer Walter McCreary, and William John Gray, they all died in the crash, and 20 other people survived. You know that they had a movie about this a few years ago.
Really?
That tells the whole story of everything that happened. Yeah. I actually saw the movie. It was an interesting movie.
Okay. Was it like a documentary, docudrama?
No. It's a drama about what happened.
Interesting. Okay.
And unfortunately, you know, the plane crash. I mean, some of the injuries to some of the people was just like crazy. Like one of the guys had his nose ripped off in the or was nearly torn off. Sorry, because he got facial lacerations, stuff like that. Because basically, the plane hit a tree and broke apart. Mm. You know, it's just It's pretty sad that this type of thing happened. I mean, especially since they just didn't plan well enough because they didn't have enough fuel.
Which one would think that's like one of the first things you check, if not the first thing you check.
Yeah. Huh. I mean, the name of the movie is Street Survivors, the true story of the Lynyrd Skynyrd plane crash. And it came out in 2017.
I'll have to look for that then.
Yeah.
Okay.
In 2017 they actually the surviving members of the band and family members of those who were killed tried to block the making of this movie. The movie I think only came out in 2020.
Okay, that understandably so. I mean, I'm sure no one wants to see that or relive it any, because that's just, it's horrible.
Yeah, it really is. Unfortunately, just talking about this makes me want to see the movie again. I didn't think the movie was great, but but still, you know, the looking at it again to see what see what actually happened according to the movie. You know, we know it's probably not going to be 100% accurate either, but still,
right? You know, still, like where are those artistic liberties? You know,
right? Exactly. And how, you know, I don't know. So, yeah, anyone can go to my website. You'll probably see that I'll have a second review of this by the time this came out. Because that's just who I am. So, basically, the engines conked out because there wasn't enough fuel. Mm. And, you know, there was an explosion with one of the engines that was on fire.
Jeez.
So,
That's one of the reasons my father doesn't like to fly. He liked Buddy Holly, died in a plane crash. Loves Lynyrd Skynyrd, died in a plane crash. Stevie Ray Vaughan died. I think he was a helicopter crash, but still, like all of his favorites.
Stevie Ray Vaughan was a helicopter crash. We talked about that a few weeks ago. Yeah.
Gone. Ah, see? Just. Oh, that's such a bummer.
Yeah, really is. All right. So you want to tell people how they can get in touch with you?
Absolutely. You can find me on Instagram under the name @thatrehack. You can also find me over on Exploding Helicopter, the podcast hosted by Will Slater, where he takes a look at films that feature an exploding helicopter. I've been on a myriad of episodes lately, so just head over to the site, start searching, and you will absolutely find me.
All right. Very cool. And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Movie Rob Minute. You can find me on Facebook, find me on Twitter, or you can find me on my website, movierobminute.com. So Until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
If you're fond of sand dunes and salty air, quaint little villages here and